Forgotten Flicks, episode 19.
I am your singing telegram.
Hello, hello, hello.
No.
What? Hello?
Oh,
yes, I am a singing telegram.
Something I would love to do to Jason. I've had him sing to me, I mean. So, yes, I am Joel, the host of Forgotten Flicks. I'm really the only one that matters. So.
Of course.
Oh, wait. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And the actual guy who does real work, and especially when we do things like Mayhem, and he forces me to talk to people and then actually sets things up that are really potentially cool for our podcast. That would be the other host, Jason.
Who? What?
You, yes.
Hey! Hello, everybody. Good afternoon, evening, morning, whichever part of the world you're in.
Yes.
Glad to be here.
Yes, I'm glad that you are glad to be here. And, of course, today we are doing Clue is our featured movie. And we'll have our six picks, as always. We're going to do something a little different, though, before we go into the lovely Clue from 1985. We are going to discuss our time at Mayhem. And before we do that, I would like to briefly mention an email we received from our boy Hammond, who was sent us a quick email just to let us know that he thought the Going Commando podcast was great. He thinks we're really hitting our stride. Really?
It's because we were talking about Arnold's banana hammock, I'm sure.
Yeah, so. That's probably exactly why. He thought the show was really funny, and he actually apparently discovered us around episode 4 or 5, and he thinks we're getting better and better again. Really? And
you've been spending too much time on the Outback.
No, that was Ben. You're thinking of Ben. Ben's the Australian.
Oh, I mix them up.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah, see, I care about our listeners. Let that be known. I remember where our listeners are from. Jason, however, is high and mighty.
Hey,
Jason doesn't care.
Jason is
so egocentric. He's all about himself. You can't even say it's like he's a nationalist, like he's just all about America. No. He's literally all about his single street in the town he lives in the middle of a swamp. That's basically what Jason's all about.
Does anything else matter?
True. So Hammond was also nice enough to give us a little Radon Chong breakdown and told us we needed to check out Crying Freeman and then subsequently Brotherhood of the Wolf, which I have on my Netflix queue and have been meaning to watch for, the last multiple years since it came out. And I just haven't because I love werewolves and I know that's what it's about. And
that's one of those movies that just grows roots in your list of movies to see. And,
yeah.
You know, my list stays on there forever. You always look at it and say, but I want to watch this, and it just kind of sits there for a million years. So.
Yeah, totally. And I really, really do want to watch it, though. It's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but my list is up to, I think, 728 movies now in my Netflix queue. I need to just go clear it out and start over again because it's kind of –
Now, wait. Is that your DVD only?
No, that's combined. So I'm sure there's some redundancy there, but
– Yeah, I think I'm up to like 620 when you combine both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and if I start to hack throughout, the podcast periodically, I apologize in advance, but I'm coming down with something and I'm trying to be a trooper. I'm here.
He was allergic to Bruce.
Yeah, that's what it was. So we'll go ahead and get into our Mayhem conversation since you brought it up there, buddy. And so we went to the Mayhem convention. Obviously, by the time this is playing, it's been about, a week and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we went about a week and a half ago. And we went for one day. We went for Saturday. I did a post about it on ForgottenFlicks.com. If you want to go check it out, it kind of like five, awesome moments from the Mayhem convention. Full disclosure, it was my very first convention of any sort, movie related. I never really have been to one. Not a real big, let's get in a relatively confined space with a bunch of perfect strangers and crammed together kind of guy. So I've kind of avoided him over the years. That being said, I had a very good time. It was awesome. We met some very cool people. Jason, would you like to fill in the blanks while I hack?
Please do. Yes, actually, one of the reasons I think we should point out, one of the reasons why you went to this is that the feature, I guess the big stars in this convention, which is put on by a company called Spooky Empire, again, full disclosure, we have no affiliation with, but the
but if they want to pay us, we'll take it.
Yeah, we won't turn it down,
no,
but we have yet to be paid. Mm-hmm. So let's just say that. Mm-hmm. But the features of this were primarily the stars of the Evil Dead series of movies. So Bruce Campbell was the number one star at this the number one build star at this convention with a bunch of his co-stars from it, and including some of the other movies he's been in together, including Ted Raimi and some of the other stars.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
not only stars,
Timothy Quill was there from Army of Darkness. He was also in My Name is Bruce. Mm-hmm. Danny Hicks, who was in Evil Dead 2, and also My Name is Bruce. They had a touching I guess you would say relationship in My Name is Bruce between the two of those guys. And Tom Sullivan, the effects master, Evil Dead, and created the Book of the Dead and all the great stuff from those early films.
I got to say, that was aside from – okay, first of all, aside from the fact that we got to meet Tom and sit and talk to him, and he was telling us about how the movie was named, and completely unsolicited how he went through all this.
Yeah, very cool.
But the fact that – in his area, his room that he was in, and he was signing autographs and stuff, and his artwork was there for sale. They also had props from the Evil Dead movies.
Mm-hmm. That
and
was awesome.
That, to me, was freaking awesome. They had the Book of the Dead there.
The Pandarian dagger.
Of it. Yeah, they had the dagger. They had the girl's leg that got stabbed with the pencil in Evil Dead.
Uh-huh.
And they had her foam leg. They had a hand from a stop motion scene that was actually never used in the final cut of the movie.
And the deadite at the end of Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
Like, and the flying deadite. Yeah.
Yep. They had some of the pieces that were glued onto the Bruce's face, and it was just really, really awesome. And Tom was phenomenal. He was really cool, and I'm hoping he because we offered for him to come on the show, and he sounded really jazzed about it.
We were horrors, people.
Yeah, we were.
Hello, yes, could you sign up? And by the way, I really we have a podcast.
I talk to my computer. Would you like to talk to my computer with me?
Yes, it's fascinating. We like to pretend people actually listen because it makes us feel a little less stupid.
But listen, Tom was awesome. Just a very, very, very nice guy, very cordial, very cool. We talked to him for a few minutes, and then so that was one big thing. Another big thing, they had a really cool Jaws museum there. I'm a huge fan of Jaws, and
That was cool, but $10 to get your picture. I
you know, let me digress for a moment. I love movie memorabilia. I love getting to meet celebrities and artists like Tom and some of those things. I don't blame them, but I sort of feel uncomfortable with the whole exchange of money to autograph things or get your picture with someone. Now, I understand that the eBay market is out there, and so people get autographs on things to turn around and sell them. So I understand that part, but I see that more with, I guess, sports stars and celebrities. But that to me.
Oh no! I honestly have zero.
The rubber shark, and they charge you $10 to have your picture taken with a prop from the movie.
That's
you're trying to make a living,
because I can pretty confidently say that was a reproduction. It wasn't like it was actually Bruce the shark from the set of Jaws, because I doubt he's in the best shape anymore to be hanging on a wall. So
then that's even worse, because I can go down to a tourist trap and get my picture taken with the stuffed shark.
Of course, and that's exactly what you're talking about. And I really, you know, the raving capitalist in me has zero problem with them making a buck off of getting their pictures.
Oh, no, they can charge whatever they want.
But where I draw the line is when there's basically half a stuffed fake fish on a wall and I'm pretending it's Jaws.
Yeah. That's a little bit much to charge.
Well, and the $5 to get into a coffin – and then another $5 to get the video recording.
To videotape you. Listen, that was a ride, technically.
Yes, it was a ride. You know what it was? It was you laid in a coffin, and they had some kind of hydraulic system under it that shook it, kind of jarred it left, jarred it right, jarred it up, jarred it down. And I guess you were supposed to be screaming your head off because you're inside a coffin. And then there's this funny, you know, night vision.
There's a voice or something in there, too.
Video, yeah. And, not so much.
But anyway, the Jaws Museum was awesome because they had Quint's actual jacket and hat. They had the actual yellow barrels from the movie. They had the fishing pole that they used when they were trying to catch them. So it was neat to kind of see the stuff that they used from the movie. which was the room next to Tom Sullivan. But
and I totally didn't see any of that because I was too busy getting up the courage to go up and talk to him and ask him if he'd be on potentially be on the podcast. So, yeah.
So anyway, met Tom Sullivan. That was awesome. Yep. One of the other highlights that I thought was pretty cool and you caught the video of was we got to sit in on the Q&A with Anthony Michael Hall, who is the stars in some of my favorite John Hughes movies, including
– He was in a John Hughes movie?
I think one.
Really? Are you sure?
I don't know.
Is it a cameo
and based
something?
On his discussion, I Breakfast Club, Weird Science, 16 Candles, absolutely phenomenal. So, and he turned out to be, I think we didn't get to talk to everybody, but he turned out to be one of the cooler guys that we heard speak. Mm-hmm. As far as to me, it just seemed like he was very.
He seemed like he was having a good time. Like he just seemed like a really kind of cool
dude.
He was
having fun with it.
He was being positive. You know, he wasn't. You know, I didn't get this air of. You know who I am, don't you?
There's
none of that.
And I think he said a couple times, "Hey, I'll take work where I can get it." So, you know, not the Hollywood elitist type. He was very kind of, I'm working at this. If you know,
so I have to tell the quick story. So as we're sitting there was two moments of awkwardness and proved what a pro the guy was. First one, and I actually felt bad for this kid because you know, you could tell he was about to crap his pants. I mean, he was just very. There was a lot of anxiety there. I picked
up.
Well,
let's set the stage for a second. First, Anthony Michael Hall is up on a stage, and there are these.
And we do have video of this that we're going to put on the site or on our YouTube channel, so that will be up hopefully soon.
Yeah, definitely go check it out. But there was what I'd say 100 people in there.
Yeah. Give or take.
Maybe 100. Yep. And then in the center of the audience, but in the middle aisle, was a single microphone stand. And he just basically said, all right, anybody have any questions? Come on up to the microphone. And so people would come up.
A recipe for disaster.
Right. So that's where this kid comes in. So sorry. Continue.
No, good setup. So the kid comes up. Anyway, I say kid. He's like probably in his early 20s. And he gets up to the mic. And
God damn it.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
Hey, you little sons of bitches. All right. This is basically in a nutshell what he said.
Yep.
And just so we're clear, the audio is not dropping out. I'm doing my impression of this kid talking. Thank you. And then he sits down.
And it wasn't just sit down. It was like he turns away from the microphone, like it's going to
arms
beam
out. Locked at his sides, feet moving. Like, you know,
shuffles.
Yes. I just, his upper torso not really moving, but his feet moving very fast as he
let the poop come out of my shorts.
Yes. And then he gets to his seat, sits down. Poor little guy. And then, of course, several jackholes in the audience decide to laugh at him.
We laugh now, but we weren't laughing.
Yes, yes. Jason waits till the guy's back's turned. Then he's like, loser. Just kidding. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and Anthony Michael Hall's kind of leaning forward, kind of Johnny Bench style. You know, he's got his hands, you know, kind of hanging there between his knees, holding the microphone. He kind of gets that little raised eyebrow, like the, So in the Breakfast Club, when John Hughes was – he started telling this story as if he was answering this kid's question.
Yes.
But obviously he just pulled the story out of the ether. I thought it was well played. It was nicely done. The other really awkward moment was the – why don't you hate something, woman? Jason, you want to explain this lady?
That was really strange because this woman comes up to the microphone. And I got to say, I think she was maybe the only woman or I think maybe there had been one other. There was mainly guys that came up. Anyway, she was in the minority. But she comes up and says, is there something you really don't like or something you really –
she said hate.
Hate or against. Or, yeah, she kind of led up to it.
You've been so positive up to this point.
Yeah, you're kind of given the – and what I think she was leading to or what she sounded like is that she was talking about that, oh, you're just loving everything. You're given the straight Hollywood answer. You know, you're kind of given the smooth answer. What do you dislike? What do you hate? And he really is just this positive guy. And it just seems like to me that in general he feels like, you know, he just takes a positive outlook on life. He takes what he can get.
My favorite thing ever, though, was that he looked at her and goes, well, let's start with you.
Well, yeah, then he goes because he kind of gave an answer and she's like, that was probably the most crap answer I've ever heard. Oh, yeah. And she said that directly to him. And he says and she goes, no, you got to tell. What do you? And he says, OK, so right up there would be this question. So it was just odd. And
it was very awkward
interplay with them. But I got to say, he very, very well played. Mm-hmm. In that he played, you know, kind of the, well, mm-hmm. I just generally don't like to look at the negative, mm-hmm. and I'm a kind of positive guy. And so I think the audience was more, cool. you know, thought she was being unprofessional or uncouth or whatever, but well, he came out looking great.
I think we have to hit on a couple quick, and then we got to get into the actual movie, you know, the point of the podcast. Yeah. The two other key things that I want to make sure we cover were, the vendor's room, which was interesting. There, we met some really cool people there. There was some amazing art. There was a few interesting moments, like I guess you'd call it the gallery of tattoo, them sort of makeshift tattoo parlors, and the two porn stars whose breasts were so large I am almost positive had their own gravitational pull. That was awkward. I didn't realize how shy I actually am. I never,
You turned three shades of red, I think. Yes. I was looking hey, wow, that's
basically
not too
bad. Entire bald ass head was, like a warning beacon.
You're radiating some heat, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, it was awkward. I mean, it wasn't good heat. Yeah, that actually frightened me, man. I was.
There were some fantastic vendors. There was some incredible artwork there, and there were some really cool recreations of movie posters, mm-hmm. or some really neat artists that had done some prints of some of the movies we're talking about. Last week's episode of Critters had an awesome one.
Yeah, I remember about that.
And I think my favorite tattoo, because there was a lot of tattoo people there, my favorite tattoo of the show was a guy who on his full upper arm had a critter tattooed on his upper arm that was just awesome. But some of my favorite booth, and I'm not saying this because, you know, they gave me a freebie, but just in
You're
general,
totally
because I purchased from them before, was the T-shirt Bordello booth, because they've got some of the funniest and coolest shirt, I guess, parodies on movies that we talk about. Yeah. And before we even mentioned that we have a podcast or anything, I bought a Jaws shirt from them that was awesome. But mm-hmm. they had just some really cool stuff, and I love their booth. And so
yeah, it was good stuff. They also have a zombie hotline, which we'll put the zombie hotline in the show notes. You can actually call, and they will, if you are in fact think you're experiencing a zombie outbreak of any shape or form, they have people online, or rather on waiting to talk to you on the phone, that will give you helpful tips on what to do with your zombie problem. So it's a 1-800 number too, I believe. So we'll put that in the show notes. That was pretty cool.
Of course,
while in the vendor room, had the really cool moment of our listener, Shannon, mm-hmm. yelling out, "Hey, Jason and Joel." And I was like, holy crap, somebody actually wants to admit they know us in public. Which was very cool. Very cool. It was very neat. It was neat to meet her in person. And she was she's awesome. She actually, and we'll get to this in a moment, but she gave our card to Bruce Campbell, and I'm sure, though she wants to be positive about giving it to him, and I'm thrilled she did it, I'm pretty much convinced he may have in fact wiped his ass with it, which in my opinion would be awesome. That would have been
don't poo-poo on it, come
yeah,
on
yeah, that it
at
was,
the very least it's in his toilet.
That's true.
It has Bruce's fecal matter on it. I will put it in a bag next to Justin Bieber's locks that I cut from him as he slept.
Yeah.
No, but listen, it was awesome, because we met a couple of very cool people that did agree to come on the show, or at least in theory,
yeah, in theory.
In our faces agreed.
Yes.
The bigger stars, Bruce, obviously we didn't get a chance to meet up with him in person, but Shannon did. And Ted Raimi, we talked to, who I'd love to come on the show. He seemed worn out. Like, it had really been a long day, and I don't blame him, because really, seeing some of the people dressed up at that place,
yeah, I was trippy.
I would have got burned out within like an hour if I was a star. But he, we met him, talked to him. He said he was going to check out the show. So at the very least, I hang on to the thought that Ted Raimi listens to our show.
Yeah, you can dream, buddy. And then, of course, we also talked to the awesome Timothy Quill and Danny Hicks, like I mentioned earlier. Those guys were great, really super nice. And Tim told us some really cool stories about like Spider-Man 2 and stuff. So hopefully if we have him on the show, he can share more of that stuff. And
I'm hoping to get Tim Quill on here. He's probably the one that I think we can get some of the coolest stories out of. So.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. And
definitely.
I'm really, like I said, disappointed didn't get to at least, shake Bruce's hand and say hi, but mm-hmm. got a little video of him. So, but that line was just stupid long. I mean, we would have done nothing else but wait in line. I just couldn't do it. So
and we didn't want to skip anybody. And, I know You know, we got an email from him, from Bruce, saying, you know, to come to his table, but, you know, we don't want to jump in line. We don't want to cause a problem. So,
well, dude, when you're that freaking busy, I don't even want to, you
exactly.
know, I go, oh, it's all about me. Can you come on our show? No, I'm not doing that. So, but hopefully one day we'll be able to, that is the Holy Grail. I was joking with somebody recently that we should do a documentary. It's sort of like a Roger and Me thing, but it's all just about how, yes. like, our desperate attempts to get Bruce Campbell to be on our show.
Yes.
But maybe we should just, like, Andy Kaufman. Of course, we're telling everybody about it now. Do it Andy Kaufman style, so we actually get a hold of him and get him to be, like, part of it, but not tell anybody he's part of it. And, like, he just can be, like, a total, you know, goof about it. Like, oh, I refuse to go on that crap show. Well, of course, actually, that may not be a goof. So... Anyway, but yes, at least we got to see the guy, and there was other cool people there. Bill Hinsman, several members of the cast of Walking Dead.
Definitely.
Cast of Boondock Saints was there. Bill Hinsman, just in case you don't know, it's so sad if I have to tell you this, people. Original Night of Living Dead, he was the zombie at the beginning.
The first zombie.
Yes, they're coming to get you, Barbara. Johnny, stop it. And Alex Winter, also known as Bill... which I can't remember what's his last name. It was, which one of them was
Bill Esquire? No,
was that Ted? Who gives a crap? Bill
Ted.
And Ted.
I don't remember.
It was Alex
from
Winter.
Bill and Ted.
Yes.
Yeah.
I swear to God, the guy looked exactly the same. Like he looked like he's aged. It was weird.
Yeah.
Aaron Gray from Buck Rogers and a very pretty actress next to her who I swear to God I recognized, but I couldn't place. And you know,
There were so many. There was so many people there. It was great. And the guy that did the creature effects from Walking
Greg Nicotero.
Dead.
Yep. Greg Nicotero.
So.
And then, of course, there's the point where you were talking. What was the lady's name? Was it Susan?
Julie.
Oh, Julie. I'm sorry. Yes, Julie.
She did the zombie survival crew. And we'll put her website because I don't remember it right this minute. Yes. I have it. But
you should have it memorized.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah.
she did a fantastic she has a great website with the zombie survival crew. And it actually has a lot of the members of the Walking Dead cast are members of her.
That's cool.
Zombie crews. And so she offered for us to definitely come on and check out the site. So we'll put that in the show notes. So you can check her out. But
what was cool is as you were talking to her, I turned around and literally like 2 feet away from me, Bruce Campbell goes walking by. He's like,
that was
very cool.
It was just amazing. I think sitting in that room with all the different celebrities, because access to that room, it just felt like everybody's just kind of hanging out. So
yeah, it was very intimate. Like I was surprised how like just you just kind of, you know, I thought it was going to be more controlled than that, I guess.
More personal than I thought it would be.
Yes, way more personal. That was very cool. Yeah. All right, so you ready to then, now that we've done our Mayhem coverage, and it didn't take a stupid amount of time, so that's relatively proud of us. We will now go into our movie from 1985. It's Clue.
Every person in this room has the perfect motive.
Stand back!
For murder.
What do you mean? Murder.
But only one of these suspects is the murderer. Is it the timid Mr. Green?
Why are you screaming?
Because I'm frightened!
Of what?
Screaming!
Or the militant Colonel Mustard?
If I was the killer, I would kill you next.
Huh?
I said if.
Mrs. White, who helped her husband on his way.
Well, it's a matter of life after death. Now that he's dead, I have a life.
Miss Scarlet, who's helped many men along the way.
Practice makes perfect. Huh.
Professor Plum, who's looking for a way.
I'm looking.
Mrs. Peacock.
I have absolutely no idea what we're doing here, but I am determined to enjoy myself.
Or did the butler do it?
No.
Paramount Pictures invites you to an evening of mystery.
Let us in!
Murder.
This is getting quite serious.
And madness. In the movie that makes a scene of the crime. Clue. It's not just a game anymore.
Not just a game anymore.
Yes. So Clue from 1985. It was directed by Jonathan Lynn. And if that name sounds familiar to you, you should be proud of yourself because he also directed My Cousin Vinny, which I freaking love. So, yes, Jonathan Lynn directed it. Mm-hmm. They pretty in case you didn't know, John Landis was actually accredited. He's one of the producers and co-writers. And Deborah Hill, as in the woman who helped bring Halloween into the world and worked with Mr. John Carpenter. Unfortunately, she passed away not that long ago. She was also one of the producers on it, and it starred Eileen Brennan, of course, Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Christopher Lloyd, Michael McKean, Martin Mull, Leslie Ann Warren, Colleen Camp, et cetera. Do you know who the singing telegram girl was? And let me pretend like I'm not staring at IMDb right now.
I actually did not look it up. So, no, I have no idea.
Okay, that's cheating because I didn't even realize it until I just glanced at IMDb. Oh. It was Jane Weidland from the Go-Go's. You know, the little pixie-looking lead singer from the Go-Go's?
Really?
Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Now that I know, it's kind of duh. Like, I think about her singing and, like, what she looked like. I was like, oh, yeah, that's her. So, anywho, yes, Clue from 1985. Jason, would you like to give us a real quick plot synopsis about this bad boy? It's very complex because it's based on a board game.
It is. I love the board game. Actually, I was a huge fan as a kid. But the synopsis story opens with the various characters showing up at this large mansion. And you have all the characters from the board game, which were Colonel Mustard, Mr. Green, Miss White, Miss Scarlet, Miss Peacock. They all have the names of the colors of the pieces that they were, and they all start showing up kind of randomly, like they're going to be there for a party. And it feels like it's almost like a 1930s, 1940s.
It's 50s, isn't it?
Or is it 50s?
I think it's 50s.
Yeah, I guess because Hoover.
And, Hoover, and they mentioned the House Un-American Activities
That's
Committee
true.
And all that. Yeah.
That's true. So 1950s feel. Some of the cars they drive up are much older and very kind of classic, almost a Rolls-Royce-ian type of thing. But they all show up and come up to this beautiful giant mansion and start filing in.
Oh,
and
wait,
the butler
– Jason, for those that are new to the show. Well, hold on. It'll be funnier if I use this one.
That sounds on fire.
Spoiler alert, people. Hold on. Nobody heard the Critters episode. This is ridiculously random. Hold on.
Hold on to the night. Hold on till the end. Power of the night.
So our spoiler alert warning until I stop being lazy and I come up with a better one is...
Power of the night.
Okay.
Oh God, I hate that song.
Okay, no, I'm actually not going to do it the whole episode. Just know that from here on out, spoilers aplenty when we talk about Clue. Jason, go.
Yes, and actually, can I say that for this movie, it's very difficult to give away spoilers because there's a lot that goes on, and the ending has like
three different endings.
Yeah. So it's actually pretty difficult, but so anyway, they all start showing up, and the butler, who is played by Tim Curry, and his name is Wadsworth.
Yeah,
is that it?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Plays the butler. He kind of introduces them, gathers them together for dinner, and they're all here for some purpose. And that purpose is they're all being blackmailed by one Mr. Body. And of course, Mr. Body and the board game is supposed to represent who the person was killed. So they, all gather together. They all have a reason to hate Mr. Body, a motive of some sort. Mm-hmm. And he, Mr. Body, comes in alive and kind of gives them each a gift. And the gifts are all the pieces from the game. They're a rope, a lead pipe, a wrench,
candlestick.
A revolver. Yep. And so they're all the items that you would kill someone with. At one point, the lights all go out. Someone screams, a gunshot rings out, and Mr. Body is dead on the floor. Right.
Can I just add one interjection here?
Yes.
I think it's a bit misleading. Shouldn't have been Mr. Body. Should have been Mrs. Body. And that should have been Yvette's name. Continue.
Yeah. She definitely had the better body than Mr. Body, for sure. Anyhow, so the rest of the movie is this tangled web of different people turning up dead. Now, none of the main characters, all named for their colors, show up dead, but the ancillary characters, meaning the maid, Yvette, the cook.
I know, isn't that sad?
Oh, yeah. The hired help. A motorist who just stops in because his car wrecked, a police officer who was just checking in because he saw the car wrecked, and
the cook.
Who was the other one? Oh, I said the cook.
Well, Jason, did you forget one?
I am your singing telegram.
I just realized that I gave a spoiler at the very beginning of the freaking.
So, no, wait, yeah, but that doesn't spoil. These are people that show up dead, and the movie is kind of a whodunit in the classic form, and it kind of goes through which one of these characters, who all have motive to do it, kills him. And Tim Curry sort of plays the host and the lead of who could have done it and mm-hmm. everything. And then the ending is just various versions of how it could have ended, and then their real ending comes up and explains who did it. So that's kind of the synopsis of what happens. It's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, obviously the movie's meant to be a throwback to kind of the Agatha Christie and Then There Were None, you know, or the old, you know, old Dark House, you know, the
yeah, almost a spoof on that.
Yeah, oh, of course.
Genre, yeah.
I will say this, and then I'm going to get right into the meat of whether or not this movie holds up, in my opinion. I will say that considering how many movies since then have been made that were obviously just meant to cash in on some game or some video game or whatever, a toy.
Yeah.
You know, that I think this movie was surprisingly well done considering it's just based on a board game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the board game itself lends itself. It's a story. It's sort of this, sort of every time you played the game, a clue, it created a new mystery. And it was, that was the whole point. But the fact that they played it tongue in cheek and it was, over the top and, had a lot of, adult humor in it. Of course, you had the great Madeline Kahn, who was just, she's freaking hilarious in anything she's in. So, it was great. And Jason and I briefly, for full disclosure, we normally don't talk about a movie beforehand, but we briefly mentioned a couple things about this. And I definitely think this movie was a case of cinematic nostalgia, but I didn't feel after watching it that I had the disorder because it held up really well. The only problem is I kind of did the laugh a couple times, but it was more from just remembering that moment so clearly. But I literally saw this movie so many stinking times as a kid, which is this is what worries me about the Weird Science episode, because I really want to still find Weird Science funny. But I'm afraid it's going to be the same thing. Like, it's going to hold up as a movie, but I'm not going to really be as engaged with it just because I saw it so many times as a kid.
But I don't think there's the same thing in that, because most recently I ended up I watched a couple clips from Weird Science. I was looking on YouTube and someone sent me some links to the YouTube when they talked about a scene with Chet. Mm-hmm. And I watched it and I laughed out loud. And I haven't
couldn't get laid in a morgue.
And so I don't think that one will be the same. And but yeah, I had the same reaction to this. It was sort of like I watched it and I was like, yeah, that was exactly as I remember it mm-hmm. back when I watched it. And what it reminds me of, and I was telling my wife this when I was watching it, it really reminds me of almost like a play.
Yeah.
Because
play.
Yeah, there's a very confined set of characters. There's kind of this very fast-paced dialogue in which, all six of these different players back and forth say things very quickly. And so that had to be really tough to be one of those folks and for those actors to play to get the timing all just right. And Tim Curry, of course, led the way for me in this. And he was the funniest one by far.
Yeah.
But it was watching it, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is kind of good. It's funny, it's cute, but it didn't make me guffaw.
I think it's one of those movies too that when my kids are a little bit older, I'm really going to enjoy watching with them, because even though it won't, it's sort of like how, you become sort of jaded and cynical and emotionally numb to so many things. And then you have kids, and while you still kind of are that about a lot of stuff, when you see them react to it with fresh eyes, the joy you get from seeing that is somewhat connected to the joy you felt the first time. You get what I'm saying? So I feel like that's
you're
what
watching them discover it.
Exactly. So I think that's what Clue will be for me, is like when I watch it with them, assuming they like it, it'll be that sort of, just kind of reliving it with them. But for myself personally, I mean, I think it holds up. I think it's a good movie. I just don't, it's literally like I was mouthing the words with the characters, and it wasn't necessarily in a good Rocky Horror Picture Show kind of way. It was just in a,
But at the same time, it was one of those movies that, for me, I'm a really, really big Tim Curry fan. And this was the first time
I have a man crush on Bruce.
Him.
You have a man crush on Tim Curry. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, who has better taste? I'm just saying. Tim Curry's a great actor. But
I have a man crush on him. Okay. I just really, right. I like his stuff. Right. And
that's why you
so
had
this
Pennywise
was to me the first thing I remember seeing.
And Benito. Go ahead.
Yeah. But it was good, and it was one of those that he got to be a star in, and I'll talk about this in a minute. I mean, sometimes he didn't get to be the star, but this was really kind of cute. It was funny, and I got to give props to the actors and actresses in this, because the more I watched it, the more I thought, God, I can't imagine trying to put this together as a director, as an actor, trying to get them to keep straight what they were supposed to be saying every time. And one of the quotes that kept catching me was the when someone would say, there's still one thing I don't understand. Every time someone would say, one thing?
Yeah.
Because it's almost like you have to watch this movie twice to get it, because there's so much that goes on.
Yeah,
and it's just like board
jokes.
Games.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 there are. And if you even look, something I didn't recognize until this last time I watched it, when they walk in the front door, the tiles in the foyer all look like the squares on the game.
Oh, do they?
Yeah,
I haven't played the game in so
perfect.
Long, I don't remember.
And they show like one scene where it's like an overhead shot almost from up on the second floor looking down to the foyer, and it's all these perfect squares. And so it definitely helps if you've played the game, the board game.
Yeah, which is funny because my wife apparently never did. She had. I was like, really?
Really?
I was like, how the hell did you grow up in the 1980s and never play Clue? She said, I never played it. It's like,
grew up in Siberia?
No.
I mean,
she loved Monopoly, but she never played Clue. It's like,
wow.
Okay, we're going to have to get Clue, and we got to play Clue, because that's just
wrong.
Oh,
gosh.
That's wrong.
Well, and my kids got, for Christmas, someone bought them there's a new version of Clue with like a talking voice, electronic. And I'm like,
it's like, that's like the steroid, even more so He-Man.
No. No, it's like the steroid Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah, those freaking action figures. When I was so pissed. I was like, well, since when does freaking Luke have python arms?
Yeah, so the board game is phenomenal.
Oh,
it's
about
very
the
fun.
Same
it's cool.
time that Jar Jar Binks created the entire scenario that led to the creation of the Empire. Sorry, go ahead.
So you're saying your favorite prequels? God, it has been episodes since we've mentioned the Star Wars prequels.
A 20-minute pod race scene. Oh, my God. Will Annie win? Will he get his freedom? If he doesn't, how will he ever become the Dark Lord of the Sith? He does. Oh, you mean there's no suspense in that scene? Because there's really nothing at stake that matters. Oh, gee, George. Way to write it. Go ahead.
What?
Huh? Hmm? I didn't say anything.
And with that, so would you say this is a flix it or forget it?
Oh, I definitely say it's a flix it, especially if you've never seen it or your kids haven't seen it. But if you've seen it 1,000 times like we have collectively, you might feel about as meh as I'm feeling at the moment.
Well, and you know, I'll give you this.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about this that is positive in general is there's a lot of movies that we've watched many years after. So we watch something as a kid, we love it. We watch it many years after. And
Commando
it's
comes to mind.
Crap. Well, that's for you. But this is one of those movies. It's pretty much exactly the same. It's not bad. It's not I'd say it's definite flicks it. Even if you've seen it in the past, you know, catch it again. It's not a bad movie. It's not a bad movie to own if you want to have it in your collection. It's even available on YouTube. It's all the parts are broken up. It's like 7 parts, but it's still available there as of the recording of this podcast.
Cool. Now that this podcast plays, we have so many listeners, and the word's going to get back to the head muckety mucks at YouTube. They're certainly going to take it off now. Great going, Jason.
Yeah, I think actually the CEO of Google listens to this podcast.
I'm pretty sure.
No. But it's definitely a flicks it, I would say. But it's not a disappointment. I don't think it's a letdown. It's a really cool, well put together movie. Definitely well scripted, kind of cute movie. The one thing I will say is this doesn't feel like a very 80s movie in that it's more the stylized of the old kind of 40s.
Just like how Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, it transcends the time period it was made in, just because of the fact that at the time it was a period piece. So yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, and I think I think you hit the nail on the head by saying it felt very much. It was literally like I had seen it a week ago, liked it, and watched it again. I was like, yeah, it's the exact same movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no difference.
No, it still is exactly the same movie. And I guess there was a part of me that was kind of hoping I would have either really just hated it, like, I hated myself for ever liking it. Like, just be like, why? This is awful. You know,
yeah.
just to get something. But no, it was good.
No, it worked out. It was good. The one thing I will say, and then this leads us into our six picks, is this actually had quite a few big names in it.
Yes, it did.
For the time.
For
our six picks this time, instead of doing six movies like Clue, we're going to do six movies starring the stars of Clue.
Indeed, we are. This movie is rated M for meh. All right, Jason, what is your number six pick?
I just got to say, I hope nobody ever from HBO listens to our podcast, because I love that music.
Yeah, I know. Cease and desist on the 1989-90.
I'm sorry, we need to change our email.
Movie intro, please.
The six picks this evening brought to you by the stars of Clue. And the first pick for me, I'm going to go from no particular order in that, but I am leaving my favorite for last. So I'm going to start with Colonel Mustard, who had my favorite quote of the movie, which was, "Are you trying to make me look stupid in front of the other guests?" Tim Curry says, "Sir, you don't need my help for that." Martin Mull plays yes. Colonel Mustard, and he plays, I guess, an ex-colonel.
Colonel Mustard.
Yeah, Colonel Mustard. And his deal was, I guess he was involved with the military and sold surplus military parts, and that was his deep, dark secret that Mr. Boddy was exploiting. But
he's a war
Martin
profiteer.
Mull.
Yep. Huh? War profiteer. Oh, wait.
War profiteer. Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. Wait, wrong one. He was a war profiteer.
He was the war profiteer. I'm going to go over to your house.
And just so we're
clear, I'm going to delete that damn song.
And if the HBO people give us static, guess what? I'm going to go through and replace every episode with when we intro the six picks. Just kidding. I couldn't even put myself through that. Go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah. So Martin,
I love the movie. Ugh, the music. So, yes, Martin Mull, who is a fantastic actor, sort of a character actor, although not as much as some of the other people in Clue, but has a phenomenal career in TV, has been acting for a very long time. And a lot of the people that were in this actually, which we'll get to in a minute, cross over into other movies with each other. So they're very well known with each other, and they, I think, great comedic actors. But the movie I picked for Martin Mull was Mr. Mom from 1983, which actually starred Michael Keaton as Jack. And this one has a special place in my heart because
you're
the
really
whole
a
issue.
Woman.
Yes, I'm going through menopause right now, and I'm feeling kind of flashy. No, Michael Keaton plays a guy who loses his job, and Terry Garr plays his wife, goes out to get a job, and her boss is Martin Mull, who is Ron, and she becomes the career woman, and he becomes the stay-at-home dad, so to speak. And so this was kind of one of those defining cultural moments when the term Mr. Mom kind of froze in time, and I actually hate that because it's one of those things. You know, I'm picking up my kids from daycare,
hey,
and I'm
Mr.
there.
Mom.
Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing tonight? Oh, nothing. Just going home, cooking dinner, cleaning. Oh, playing Mr. Mom tonight? No, I'm dad. They're my effing kids. It doesn't make me an aberration because I take care of my kids.
Which is sort of ironic, since the whole point of the movie was that at the time it was, you know, this sort of relatively new social phenomena that was sort of, you know, changing the dynamics of society, which is what that movie kind of was about. So sort of ironic that they missed the freaking point.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, is that kind of like the people who were dressing up at the mayhem in the orange shirts?
Oh, the Clockwork Orange gang.
Yes.
Oh, yes. My favorite. Yes, the four or five, I'm guessing, teens that were all dressed in these extraordinarily, like, brand new, well-pressed, crisp, clean, Clockwork Orange T-shirts, wearing, like, I swear to God, their hair looked like Justin Bieber hair. I mean, I don't really know much about that kid, but that's what it looked like to me. And all I could think of, really, Really? So you're going to wear shirts about a movie, which you're obviously trying to be like Alex and his droogs and, you know, a little of the old ultraviolence and, you know, their sort of nihilistic chaos.
Anti-culture.
Yes, anti-culture as you walk through vendor displays and basically participate
everyone's
in mass consumerism.
Dressed.
Everyone's dressed the
same.
God. And now, if they've been actually dressed like Alex and his droogs, like with the like kind of the big diaper looking thing and the bowler hats, okay, that would have been cool.
I would have given them much more credit.
Much more
for that,
props. But come on, guys, yeah. Really?
So this movie actually did set a definition and kind of changed or at least set the tone for that whole dad being the can't handle being at home and take care of the kids and everything goes crazy.
Oh,
and,
that's true.
It is actually a very funny movie. And Martin Mull plays a funny part. He kind of comes on to Terry Garr,
are you going to make me push the button?
Push the button.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm not going to give it away.
You sure?
Can I say it? Oh, okay. Can I? Go ahead, do it.
Sure.
Yep. At one point, Michael Keaton is working on, or kind of working on, the back room. Like he's putting on an addition and working on it. And Martin Mull comes in and he goes, what are you putting in? 220? And Michael Keaton says, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
That's an electrician joke.
Yes.
I didn't know that either.
But it
and
is actually
Jason
very, very funny.
Jason pointed at
movie.
My genitalia, laughed, and said, "Well, little man, let me explain manly things to you." And then proceeded to explain to me the difference between a 220 versus a whatever.
110.
Yeah, whatever. Gives a crap.
It's a girly man. Yeah, you don't even know anything about electricity.
No, I don't. So is it my turn to talk, finally?
No.
Because my movie is super important. The movies that I'm going to say.
All right, go ahead.
What the hell accent is that?
So, Mr. Mom 1983. Okay. Your accent's awful.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
My pick for number 5, ladies and gentlemen, the cultural classic, Police Academy 2. Yeah, that's right, folks. I didn't even go with the original. Police Academy 2, their first assignment. I picked this one because of one Miss Colleen Camp, a.k.a. Yvette. If you need no other reason to rent Clue, folks. And I'm including male and female in this. I don't give a damn.
Although I got to say, honestly, Leslie Ann Warren actually looked better to me in the movie.
She was a very attractive, sexy lady. But yeah, no, sorry, you're wrong.
No, you disagree.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. We need to do a poll: Yvette or Miss Scarlet. I will win that. The French maid. Okay.
Or the old prostitute lady, the madam.
I didn't say that. Wow, why are you so hateful? So Colleen Camp, I for an honorable mention, I almost went with Joy of Sex, which I believe came out in 82-ish. One of those movies that me and a couple of my buddies back in the day got their mom to rent us. Yeah, it's called The Joy of Sex and Colleen Camp's in it. Okay. Harris McKay.
Yeah.
So Police Academy 2, their first assignment. This, of course, is the movie that they rushed to theaters. I mean, took their time developing. Not that they were trying to exploit the success of the first film. And it came out the next year, 1985. And the original came out in 84. It basically is Mahoney, a.k.a. the Goot, Gutenberg, Steve, Bubba Smith, Michael Winslow, you know, the mouth guy. Of course, Colleen Camp, Howard Hessman. He of WKRP in Cincinnati and head of the class. And also George Gaines, also known as Punky Brewster's adopted dad, Henry. And Bobcat Goldthwait has a part in this, as he did in subsequent Police Academy films. And so anyway, the plot is sort of irrelevant. they've graduated.
It's the same as every.
It's pretty much. They graduated the Academy. I guess other than the fact that they have just graduated the academy. This is their quote-unquote first assignment. It's sort of them running rampant through the city. Much like most Police Academy movies, they have the ubiquitous gay bar scene. They have lots of cleavage shots. Tackleberry with his quote-unquote symbolic gun. And yes, his weaponry. Colleen Camp plays a officer in this, Sergeant Kathleen Kirkland, who I do believe ends up marrying Tackleberry. So obviously,
yes, I think she's
maybe his gun wasn't compensating.
She was attracted to his gun.
His 44 Magnum.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Nothing like dick and boob jokes. So So Police Academy 2, that's pretty much all I have to say. And of course I don't have the sound bite, so I'll just do it by rote. Excuse me. That will be stuck in your head for the rest of today. Jason, what's your next pick?
I hate to admit this. I love this movie.
I do too. I don't give a crap. I walk down the halls at work under my breath going, and then my boss looks at me weird and I'm like, what? You don't like the Academy? Recognize.
Yeah.
So your next pick?
My next pick. Not quite as memorable tune, but memorable from the standpoint of it starred a Christopher Lloyd.
Who is he?
Who in this played
Marty.
Sir Plum, who is most notable for his role in Taxi.
Yes, Taxi. That's why he's the most. Yes. That's why the kids today know him.
Yes, exactly.
Because he was that crazy guy in Taxi.
Who seems to be have been in, you know, I guess 1,000 different movies, TV shows. Phenomenal character actor. And I think that's one of the things that made this movie Clue, is that a lot of these folks were very, very specific character actors. But I chose –
wait, hold on. Don't tell me. Can I just guess real quick?
Yes, because I didn't tell you what I was going to pick. So
no, you did not. Let me just guess. Let me think about it for one second. I know it wasn't Back to the Future. That's too obvious. Back to the Future 2, Back to the Future 3, again, probably too obvious.
Nope, you're right.
So no Doc Brown.
Nope.
In this scenario is what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Nope.
Probably not Camp Nowhere.
I thought about that one.
Yeah. Well, that's sad that you even thought about it. let me think. Oh, he was also in Joy of Sex. And by the way, it was 1984, 1982. I'm cheating at this point.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let me think. Oh, he was in Mr. Mom, which I probably just screwed up one of your connections, didn't I?
Nope. And I almost chose T-Bone and Weasel, but I didn't.
Mainly because it's called T-Bone and Weasel. Oh, I bet. No, I know what you picked.
Gregory Hines.
Oh yeah, no, I know what you picked. The Dream Team. I actually like that movie.
No, and I didn't Keaton. Choose Field of Dream or not Field of Dreams. What was the Angels in the Outfield?
Oh God. How about DuckTales the movie?
Oh, DuckTales. No. DuckTales. I actually chose – close. You're close. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That was my next guess. Yeah.
Yes. 1988, it was the hybrid animation live-action movie from Disney.
And they had their own Yvette.
Yes. They had Jessica Rabbit. I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Okay, wow. I will never be able to watch that again. Thanks for ruining it, Jason. I'll hear your voice when she says, oh God,
I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way.
What's the cause of ED? There it is, ladies and gentlemen, I've just solved it.
Jason's sexy voice.
Jason's voice saying that coming out of Jessica Rabbit's lips. That is the cause of ED.
I gotta tell you, what's hard for me to believe is that this is an 80s movie. For some reason, it just feels a little bit newer, and I don't know why, but stars Bob Hoskins, who plays a detective who is trying to help out the Toon World, Roger Rabbit, kind of clear his name, solve this murder, and Christopher Lloyd plays the bad guy, Judge Doom. And I love Christopher Lloyd as the kind of quirky professor type, which is who he played in Clue and Back to the Future, but he also really plays this psychopathic evil guy as well, which one would argue that his role in Taxi was sort of like that. But so Who Framed Roger Rabbit was 1988, and it's, you know, the story of Roger. Someone gets killed at an animation studio and he's framed for it, and Bob Hoskins tries to clear him, and spoiler.
Oh, hold on. I'm totally dropping. I love how at the beginning, I was like, oh, and I won't use this throughout the whole episode.
Of course not. it turns out that Judge Doom is behind the murders, and Christopher Lloyd is really a toon who is dressed to look like a human. But he plays a really funny character in this, and a really kind of cool evil character, especially at the end when his voice comes in. So I know that there is a myriad of Christopher Lloyd movies out there, but this is just one that I thought was kind of out there, and I love him in, and it was one of those I thought was a little different. So anyway, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, 1988.
Nice. All right, so my pick, this we're down to number three, is High Anxiety from 1977, a not that often mentioned Mel Brooks film. Originally, I was going to go with Blazing Saddles. I picked this because of Madeline Kahn, which is the reason why I almost went with Blazing Saddles, because Blazing Saddles is awesome. But I'm just going to hold to the probably false belief that everyone and their brother's seen Blazing Saddles and knows about it, and High Anxiety is probably less known. So that's why I figured, let's talk about a little High Anxiety. So in it,
I know about it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's very funny. Mel Brooks plays the main character. He wrote and directed it. He's a Richard Thorndike, and he is a psychologist or psychiatrist, I don't remember which, and he ends up going to this institute for the very, very nervous, and he discovers there's some nefarious things that are happening, and as he starts digging deeper, he's framed for murder, which forces him to not only solve the murder, but to also confront his own psychiatric condition of high anxiety. He's basically scared of everything. This movie is meant to be a loving homage to all things Alfred Hitchcock, one of my personal favorite filmmakers of all time. Personally, one of my favorites, I guess I should say. And it's probably more like Airplane was to disaster movies, in the sort of the airport disaster movies of the 70s. It's probably more to Alfred Hitchcock movies as what that was to those films than, say, like what Young Frankenstein was to
Frankenstein.
Yeah, Frankenstein, damn it. that movie was just meant to be an homage in general to the Universal Pictures, whereas I feel like High Anxiety is more of a straight spoof, like kind of like how Spaceballs was with the Star Wars films and everything.
It's
definitely closer to probably Spaceballs than it is like Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles, which kind of stand on their own in a way. Even regardless of whether you've seen all the other pictures. What was that funny?
I love Spaceballs.
Okay. You know what's hilarious? I'm not going to even go there. I'm not going to go there.
Don't go there.
That needs to be an episode. So
we're in 2013 at this point.
Yeah,
so.
Pretty much. We have our schedule laid out for the next 3.5 years, all in the last 10 episodes. So, but Madeline Kahn plays Victoria Brisbane. She's sort of I wonder if she's really the femme fatale, at least at first. Should I do it?
No, just blast it.
Yeah, I'm not even going to spoil anything. What an excuse to do that. So, but look, Cloris Leachman is in it. She's freaking hilarious. She plays Nurse Diesel. Harvey Korman, who is in a butt ton of Mel Brooks' stuff, and of course was in one of our picks from last week, Munchies. Come on. Dick Van Patten from Eight Is Enough, also known as the Jason Story. And even Barry Levinson has a small part because he co-wrote it. The director, Barry Levinson, who did Rain Man and a bunch of other great films. So, yes, High Anxiety, 1977, Mel Brooks. If you've never seen it and you love Hitchcock, for the love of God, rent it. Jason, your next pick?
Yes. My next pick is a film by Tim Curry, who you've probably heard a million times over because he is a phenomenal voice actor and has been in a whole butt ton of cartoons and video games and TV series, especially if you have kids, because he's been in things like Jimmy Neutron. He's been in Little Mermaid series. He's been in Gargoyles from the 1990s. I mean, a bunch of cartoons. But he's also had some phenomenal movies. The most famous of those is
Congo.
Rocky Horror Picture Show. Yeah, right. Rocky Horror Picture Show. He was also in The Three Musketeers and Barbie and the Three Musketeers.
Wow.
I might add,
and yeah, he's going to tell you a bunch of crap. Oh, because I have kids, I know that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I watch Barbie movies for fun. So there is a lot to choose from for him, and there are a lot of features, but I wanted to get a little off on this one. And my favorite role he plays, and stay with me on this, 1996, Muppet Treasure Island. Have you seen Muppet Treasure Island?
I don't even know what the hell that meant. Yeah, yes, I have, actually. It's not bad.
It is
pretty
actually
much anything
his role
is
hilarious in this. Yes, he plays Long John Silver in a
Long Dong
Muppet
what?
Movie. Long, Long Duck Dong.
What?
But it's a great. It's actually a funny adult movie too, because even though it's the Muppets and you know it's Kermit and Fozzie and the gang, it's actually a really funny comedy also. And he plays, like I said, Long John Silver and befriends. I can't even remember who the kid's name is. What's his name?
I don't remember. Young... I actually forgot he was in it.
Yeah, Jim Hawkins, Young Hawkins. That's he keeps calling him Young Hawkins. Anyway, he plays in it. Billy Connolly's in it from Monty Python's crew and everything. It's a phenomenal movie, and Tim Curry is hilarious in it. But he was also in Three Musketeers,
Hold
the
on,
original.
Did you say
and
Billy
played...
Connolly was part of Monty Python's crew?
Wasn't he?
I don't think so. Billy Connolly is an act. I mean, a comedic actor. I don't know that he was ever in Monty Python.
Yeah, he's a British actor. I thought he was with Monty Python.
Oh, so you're
Monty
a British
Python
comedian
stuff.
By default. You had to be part of Monty Python?
Yes. I thought that was part of the
wow.
deal, that you can't be British comedian unless you're part
of... If you'd like to write in your hate mail to Jason at ForgottenFlicks.com, who apparently thinks that if you have a comedic bone in your body and you're British, well, by God, apparently you're like the Groundlings. Apparently, Monty Python's like the Groundlings. It wasn't just the core crew of Idol and Cleese and you know, Gilliam and Gubby. No. It was anybody. But it's like the Harry Potter movies. You can't get in unless you're a Brit. Go ahead, Jason. You were saying, I'm sorry, did I interrupt you? Apologize.
Should I leave the show now? Is that what you're saying?
That's okay. We got the gerbil on standby. Go.
Good night, folks. That's it. I'm out. anyway, Muppets?
Yes.
Did I say Muppets?
Yes. So the
Muppets was a hilarious movie. So, I'm pardon the Billy Connolly comment. I didn't mean that.
The best part is if you turn out to be right.
I don't know. I just he's hilarious in it. He plays Billy Bones, and Billy Connolly is very, very funny in it. I love him. And I don't know as much because I'm not that old. So how's that?
Right. No? Yeah. Okay. So then we're going with. Muppet Treasure Island. That was your pick.
Muppet Treasure Island. Yep.
Okay.
1996.
Good
deal. Tim Curry.
Cool. Anything Muppets works for me. Although the Muppets from Space one was a little. Yeah. So my number one pick. And again, another one that's going to get a show all its own. So I'm not going to go into it too deeply. But because of Michael McKean and technically Colleen Camp, because she's in it as well. Daryl from 1985. And just off the top of my head. I'm going to see if I can remember. I'm legitimately doing this off my head. I mean, I have IMDb open, but I don't think it tells you what the Daryl stands for. It's Data Archiving Robotic Youth Life Form, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's it. So anyway, that's what Daryl stands for, but it's about a little boy named Daryl, played by the extremely talented, what was his name? And I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. I'm feeling like a jackass.
It's the same kid that was in Neverending Story. He was Bastion.
Yeah, Bastion, I know. And you know what? It ain't – for what the – why the hell does an IMDb have it up at the top? It's Barrett Oliver. I just popped into my head, but are you kidding me?
I don't know.
The freaking star of the freaking movie. It says cast overview, first build only. Well, I think the kid who is the freaking title of the movie should be top build.
Oh, I recognize that. I got there and I had to go to other cast to get him in there, even though he's the star
it's
of it.
Yeah, Barrett Oliver, right? Isn't that it? Barrett Oliver? Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so now that I've got that out of my system, that's just stupid. So freaking IMDb. So Barrett Oliver plays Daryl, who, you know, minor spoiler alert, since, you know, you can tell from the trailer that he is a basically a robot, cyborg, artificial intelligence, whatever. He ends up, becoming part of a family. Michael McKean is the father. He's not really funny in this, as I recall.
No. And much more serious, dramatic.
Yeah. And this is sort of like one of those quintessential 80s movies. Of course, the big bad government agency that created him is trying to get him. You know, some people want to destroy him. Some people want to save him, et cetera, et cetera. I also remember something like, I think it's SR-71 Blackbird at some point.
Yeah, he steals it to go home. Sorry.
Spoiler alert. Yes. So anyway, so it's a very 80s movie. It's like in that vein of like, you know, like Short Circuit or, you know, God, I don't know, freaking everything. There's a certain style. I always want to call it like the 1980s big budget family flick that also had pretty heady adult themes and language in them. Like, they were meant, they seemed like they were kids' movies, but they were.
Yeah, but because they maybe starred a kid, but that really wasn't a kid movie.
Yeah, like, it was because it was right before the PG-13. Well, actually, no, this was 85, so this was PG. This could have been PG-13, but I think it was PG.
Yeah.
It was when they were definitely far more liberal between the PG-13 and PG, because, like, as we discussed with just one of the guys, you know, you don't get,
yep,
unless you're Titanic and you have to make a PG-13 because you've got to recoup your freaking insane budget. otherwise, you would have been R. You know, for the most part, PG-13 movies today are extremely tame compared to what they used to be. Although I think on the violence level, they're probably more violent,
bit,
but less sexual language stuff.
Yeah.
So anywho, so Daryl from 1985, just watch the trailer. It is all kinds of 80s awesomeness.
It's
like,
good.
Like I said, robot kid, you know, family wanting to save him, suburban. It has like a Spielbergian vibe, though he had nothing to do with the film that I'm aware of. So
that's a good point. It does actually kind of feel.
I could see him having made it or around that time period, or definitely produced it. But yeah, it's great stuff. Daryl, 1985. That was my number one pick. So on that note, Jay, do you want to throw out the old voicemail number for folks?
Absolutely. Call us anytime, anywhere on the globe, 206-203-0491. If you're outside the U.S., you got to throw some kind of prefix on that. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
whatever.
How long does the
Jason
apply?
Doesn't really give a crap.
I don't.
He doesn't even, you know, I'm sure if you were like in some other state, you might have to do something else. But no, he doesn't care.
Yeah, okay.
He doesn't care because, you know.
If you're in Washington, call us.
Yeah, whatever.
I do want to clarify something because I realize I am going to get hate mail for this. Billy Connolly is not, in fact, British.
Oh, he's not.
That's even better.
Oh, yeah.
He is Scottish.
Oh, good point. Yeah, no crap. Well, hey, that's UK.
Kind of.
Well,
no.
He's not
if you
English.
Asked a Scotsman if he was British, say no. I'm Scottish. So,
oh yeah, that's a good point.
I would have to say no.
With a last name like Robertson, you think I'd friggin' know that? So anyway. Yeah. come to our website, forgottenflicks.com. That's flicks with an X. We have a post up there recently that honestly had the most tweets of any post I think we ever put up there. And I guess we need to write more about conventions because people apparently like that. So yeah, go there, check that out. Obviously you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Forgotten Flicks and Jason is Flick Sidekick. And, check us out on iTunes, of course, or search for Forgotten Flicks. If you'd like to leave us a glowing, wonderful 5-star review, just telling us how unbelievably awesome we are, despite Jason's, you know, horribly
cultural insensitivity,
insensitivity and nationalism and all that good stuff. You know, other than that, leave us a great review, you know? You know what I'm saying? So,
or lay a turd if you want.
Yeah. 5-star review full of hatred and anger. It's a must listen. So, on that note, Jason, do you have any final mentions, any final things you'd like to say about Clue? Or
There's just still one thing I don't understand.
Oh, God, what?
One thing?
Oh, sorry. I was supposed to. One thing?
Why do we do this podcast?
Yeah, why do we do the podcast? Or you should have said, would it make a long story short and I could just yell at you, too late, because I did that like 8 times.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so on that note, remember, a flick is only forgotten if you're not wearing pants and if you're not talking about it.